Thank you very much for inviting me to come. I would have said if I was a late speaker, I would have quoted Monty Python and said now for something completely different. But since I'm the first speaker, well, you're going to start with something different. What I'm going to talk about today is supporting interoperability by leveraging some standard-based systems. But I'm not going to talk about FinMS directly. I'm going to talk about it a little bit indirectly. One of the reasons that I wanted to be here today and was glad for the opportunity to speak is the program that I'm involved with. This is the Cancer Biomedical Informatics Grid, or CA Big Project, for which I'm the program manager, is very interested in looking at how we can maintain interoperability with other systems, and FinMS being one that we're very interested in. So as such, what I'm going to talk about today is how we've been managing interoperability between heterogeneous systems using a message-based tooling that we use in CA Big. But also, I want to point out in a couple of places where either the software can be reused, this is all freely available open software, but how it can be reused or maybe used as a template or a suggestion about the way things can be done. I think, as everybody knows, it's a very challenging environment where you have very, very many external stakeholders. You've got a lot of folks who are outside of your immediate institutions, outside of the immediate organization, who may have a need or a desire to connect what they're doing to a broader activity without necessarily having to dive deeply into their own informatics software and make changes, modifications, add a lot of new tooling. This can be very difficult to do in a diverse community, as we've found. Of course, our community, you know, even though it's on the order of 100 and some institutions, is still much smaller than the public health community, which is in the thousands of institutions. So if you'll bear with me, what I'd like to talk to you about today is these solutions that we've developed, and really to provide for interoperability on the grid, in our case, the CA grid, for legacy applications. The CA grid is a Globus-based system. It's something very similar to what I've heard a lot of talks about here today. What we'll do is we'll go through an example of one way to do this, kind of one approach that we've taken, and kind of talk through it in a bit of detail and talk about the tooling. I'll also talk about some other ways to do this in a very high level, just to indicate that there are a lot of possible approaches. And again, I stress, these approaches are general, they're design patterns. They're not dependent on any specific tooling or even the tooling that that we use. They should be fairly general. So I'll talk just a minute or two about CA Grid as an exchange infrastructure, kind of what is it, how does it work, just to level the field here a bit. I'll talk, as I said, a couple of approaches to adaptation of legacy systems, the design patterns approach that we've taken in our program, just at a high level, and talk through an example of adapting that system to grid compatibility. And at the very end, I'll tap through some resources. This will obviously be available online as well, should you be interested in diving in and taking a look at these resources. So again, just for background, what is CA Big? You've probably heard this a million times, but it's a common distributed infrastructure. The goal is to provide a mechanism for the research community to focus on innovation, for the researchers, the clinicians, the stakeholders to do what they do best. We want to provide a shared set of harmonized terminologies, data elements, data models, and an architecture to manage it to facilitate that activity. So in other words, we'd like to standardize the way in which information is communicated to provide and enable that work to work. Now, of course, this is familiar to you, and Finn, of course, represents a very similar approach. Collection of interoperable applications layered upon that, which are developed to common standards. Those users need tools to do their work. The idea is to layer on top of that infrastructure, that grid infrastructure, tools that can be used to facilitate their activities. And again, those are built to common standards as well. And then again, for us, because we're a cancer, it's cancer research data available for mining and integration widely throughout the community. Remember, one of our key goals, at least for us, is making sure that all that data that's been kind of tucked away in silos can be put out in a consistent and interoperable way for others to use. So the system, CA Grid, as I mentioned, it's grid-based. The tooling, underlying tooling is Globus. It's a software infrastructure containing services, toolkits, application programming interfaces, and then, as I said, the application. So it's kind of, when we talk about the grid, we're talking about the whole thing. It's also a production deployment, right? So there are certain core services that are used, and I'll point it out briefly, for things like security, managing groups, but also managing vocabularies and data standards. The semantics are really important. And one of the things that makes CA Grid unique is that it takes the architecture of a grid, which is standard-based, and a set of common semantics and metadata and puts them together so that the data that's being exchanged is semantically rich. It's not simply a numerical data being shuffled from place to place with the grid as a transport layer. It's ensuring that the data that gets transported does so in an interoperable way. And that's actually quite challenging. And I've mentioned earlier to some of the folks, the community of developers, the people who are using these things, to provide the applications and teas. It is really the critical element to makes this go. That said, as in many of these things, CA Grid or CA Big is not primarily challenged technically. It's a lot of technically new things that are interesting, but for the most part, we're drawing on the same resources that every program really largely leverages open source makes use of. We use Globus, we use all these standard tools that you'd recognize. Technologically, it's challenging and interesting, but overall, this is more of a sociological problem. It's that community of users that turns out to be very challenging. How do you engage these users, particularly those users who already have a vested stake or interest, or just, you know, a lack of ability or capability to modify or change? In other words, what we can't do really is go out to all of those stakeholders outside and say, hey, use this stuff, or we'll have this. I'll show you the grid in a minute. And you just have to take it and use it, kind of replace what you're using. That is a non-starter. It's a non-starter for most in the community. You've got to find ways that you can allow them to continue to do what they do, the workflows, the mechanisms and methodologies that they use, as well as much as possible the tooling they use, while remaining interoperable with the grid at large. So sometimes you talk about getting on the grid. You'll hear me say this a couple of times. This is a definition. But really what we mean is putting the grid tooling in place and advertising the availability of those services to others. And I'll talk about what that means. We've been at this, developing the grid toolkit from about 2004. As you can see, it's gone through several iterations. The last stable release, this is March 2008, 1.2. We're hard at work on a subsequent release. We'll be betaing that in the near future. But this has been, and again, it's built on top of Globus, so it's also built on top of a fairly well, long-standing environment. What this environment looks like, the grid production environment, is a set of services. You see services on the community-provided services here on the left, data, analytical, and so on, as well as, what's key and important, and inside the community box, this is something you don't want to miss, some of the security services that are providing for authorization authentication also reside within the community. There are a set of higher-level services that manage things like workflow and manage the higher-level grouping. Down here, you look in the box, the red box is security services. Things like authentication, grid grouper, which provides a mechanism for aggregating together users into groups. One of the real goals of CA Grid was to provide a mechanism whereby individual institutions could provide authorization authentication for their users and could select what resources were available to what users, even those users that are authorized or authenticated elsewhere. The intent here is to provide what, in essence, is a very large-scale single sign-on environment, but where certificate authorization authority can live within the institutions that know those people best. And yet, you can still control access to your own resources within your own institution locally. That's a really important point, and it's subtle to investigators, and it's not subtle at all to IT people who go, yeah, right, of course. We don't want some other university or the NCI or somebody else managing access to our intellectual property. And as you can see, a box of set of applications, both web applications, the CA Grid portal and others, and a set of client applications, which both provide access to and manage activities on the grid. So again, you know, the grid itself, the grid as a concept, a set of software that was illustrated in the picture before, itself doesn't provide the applications and doesn't provide the data. Those come from the community, they come from those who've been developing the tools and software and databases, and that data is just provided access through to the grid. And you'll see this in a minute. But the real value of this, the real value of the grid, is that it provides a mechanism that does not require a lot of expert intervention on the part of the individual investigator. It does require some enterprise software installation and maintenance by the local IT folks, but really not a lot. The installers are pretty good. They're pretty solid. But the key is to provide that mechanism that allows people to consume grid resources. So, okay, assuming you can deploy the grid package, which isn't terribly complex, I usually tell people if you don't have to take into account dealing with the security services and the administration at your local institution, you can deploy it in a couple hours. I've got a grid node running on this PC in my basement. Of course, I don't need an IRB or the local security people to tell me that's okay. But from a technical standpoint, it's fairly straightforward. Now, attaching legacy applications, or those things that exist today, to the grid is a little bit more challenging, but this is what this set of subsequent set of slides is about. The slides will go through a set of approaches. I'm not going to go through in detail all of the approaches, but I'll put them up and sort of talk through them briefly just so you can see what they are. They're couched in terms of design patterns. For software people, this has become fairly common, but for those who aren't familiar, design patterns are just high-level abstract representations of approaches to carrying out activities. People in the software field are most familiar with design patterns are used for programming. So they're common reusable patterns that are used to inform general programming, which then often are instantiated in particular pieces of software or code when you're building stuff. In this case, these are just design patterns that will show you some ways in which that grid can connect. And again, this is a point we're all to remind the audience, the point here is not necessarily to look at any particular piece of tooling, although I will drill down in one, but it's to illustrate how, in an abstract way, you can tie into a grid and attach it to legacy services and in a way that's reproducible throughout the community. So here's just a quick set of them. As I said, there are six. I'm going to focus on three, Message Broker, but they range from wrapping the tool, so the CA Big Compatible API, that's a piece of software that one would write, and you can see it kind of is halfway inside and outside the box, communicating directly with the API of an existing tool, but providing a mechanism to go out. For people who manage or use your own software, that's probably the most simple and straightforward thing to do. You already understand your API, you have people who do it, you have access inside that box. Writing an API that provides another grid API isn't actually terribly complicated or difficult, and we provide tools for doing that. There's a freely available CA Core SDK that you can get to do that. But it's, again, it requires that you've got access to that tooling, and in some sense, the tooling is compatible. It can be hooked up. That won't work, by the way, if you're a purchaser of a piece of commercial software for which you may not have access to the innards of the application, or maybe not even an API. Direct data access is another example where another tool, an existing CA Big tool, remember all this stuff is freely available and open source, you can kind of borrow the API from that tool, add a little bit to that tool, and have it either directly call your database or address the API of an existing tool. This is actually relatively straightforward, but it has some of the same dependencies as the wrapper as one. But if you've got a tool that can expose everything you need, then you can do that. And in fact, we have a lot of people in our community who have existing systems, tissue banking systems, for example, that are already well used within their institutions, who don't really want to deploy the CA Big tissue banking tools, but they want to make it available to the grid. They take the CA Big tissue banking tool, do a little wiring inside it, and hook it up. It takes a little bit of programming and software expertise, but it can be done. I'll skip three because I'm going to talk about it in a bit of detail. There's data warehousing. Perhaps all of us are familiar with that. If you can write an extraction, transform, and load script that can hit your existing tools, you can then warehouse that within a CA Big tool by poking it directly into the database and providing it out. We see this widely done. And some of the CA Big tools, particularly things like CA Integrator is a tool that's really designed for this. So again, it's almost all done by ETL. Something we sort of jokingly call clone and own, where you literally take an API out of a CA Big tool and put it in, the whole thing, whole stock. For things that are very, very similar, use the same programming environment, use some of the same databases, we've seen people do this. They just take the whole API out and reproduce it. And then finally, generate an API. This is kind of what we always say sort of the recommended approach, because this is what we generally do. The CA Core SDK, the tools, the developer's toolkit, is designed to take a model of an application and generate an API kind of automagically. When fed a UML modeling language version of a tool, of a given database or a given data resource, that can then generate an API in Java, web services, SOAP, and REST. It just does it automatically as part of it. And then you need to plug the data, the stubs that come out into your own database. So again, that's fairly straightforward to do, but then it assumes that the people are willing to sit down and really learn how to use these CA Big tools. And that can be difficult and challenging. So to focus on three, and this is the one I'm going to talk about a bit, and one of the reasons I like it the best, especially for this audience, and furthermore why I think it may be directly relevant to some of the things you guys are thinking about, is this is what I call the Home Depot approach, and I'll show you why in a minute. So just a couple of assumptions quickly. For our little model, we're going to talk through it. I'm going to make some assumptions that the institution that's doing this follows a couple of paradigms. One, it's that the institution needs to share some data from a clinical trial or other identifiable activity with authorized collaborators. Where it's not just going willy-nilly up on the web, but they want to have some security for that as well. And it's chosen CA Grid as a means to do so. The data resides within clinical systems that aren't readily available for direct access. So these are clinical or they're at the hospital. Some of you may be familiar with lab systems that may belong to another institution. They can't just reach through and muck about with the APIs and so on. And you know, for folks who have a clinical background, you know, I made the joke last time I gave this to a clinical audience. I said, well, you know, can you think of anybody where your hospital will just let you sort of go make API calls willy-nilly to their database whenever you want? And that always gets a big laugh because there's nobody in a hospital environment is going to let you do that. But what they will do is they're willing to generate messages or reports. Nice thing is everybody's familiar with reports. Almost any institution, no matter how IT challenged, can generate a CSV format report or a tab delimited spreadsheet. Almost everybody, I mean, at least if they're in any way computerized. And this goes down to folks who just keep their records in spreadsheets, because you can dump that spreadsheet to a CSV file regularly. So back piece could even be manual. But this goes up, and HL7 V2 messages and so on are fairly common in hospitals, particularly laboratory systems that this example has been used in. But the point is, if you can go into your institution and say, you know, could you just regularly generate, maybe on a cron job automatically, some CSV files or tab delimited reports, then we'll turn those into a message and send them. That's the ideal. In this case, we have a data warehouse system, a CIBIC data warehouse system, for clinical data, and they're assuming that that system has data elements that correspond. For this particular audience, it's almost as interesting to merely say, we have a message, an HL7 V3 or even V2 message, that we'd like that data end up in. Because, you know, for the FIN paradigm, the example, you know, you probably have a receiver for that message elsewhere, either at the CDC or at a collaborator. So even if you can get as far as just the HL7 message in a semantically harmonized way, then you've actually gone down that path, and I'll talk about that. And then finally, the deploying institution has the staff or the contractors who understand enough of this, the data elements, not the programming, not the software, because as I said, and I'll show you in a minute, this is sort of the Home Depot approach, right? You're really not doing any software, you only do some deploying. But even that could be encapsulated and packaged. It's not impossible to do so. But to deploy them and map them to the HL7V3 message. The mapping tool, by the way, has got a GUI. It's a very friendly tool. So let's talk about that. I've gone through this a bit. So let's talk a minute about the components. This is the Home Depot, right? So this proposed solution takes advantage of a series of components. And again, all these things are freely available and open source. The grid, we talked about that, right? They've deployed it locally. An HL7 V2 or CSV or tab delimited or some kind of message or a piece of file that contains the data that's going to be shared regularly. CA adapter, I'll show you this in a minute. This is a GUI for mapping these data elements to and fro, for actually doing the drag and drop, identifying how the things that you've got map onto the things that are in the message. Something we call a Cancer Center Hub client, that's the transfer agent. It watches for that message and shoots it off when it appears. This is particularly good if your system can generate reports automatically. So, you know, we'll generate that report at, you know, 2 a.m. and we'll send it off to you or send that message. This Hub client manages that and handles sending it off. Something called C-Exchange Request Processor, that does the message processing. Receives that message from the Hub client and it knows where to route it, what to do with it. It's a traditional enterprise services bus component. Again, as I mentioned earlier, from the standpoint of some of the FIN things that I've heard about, it may not be necessary. That Cancer Center Hub client can generate and send a HL7 V3 message. That might be enough, especially if there's only a single endpoint that's going to. But if there are multiple endpoints or any sophistication in the message routing, that request processor can manage it. It's just a tool for sending messages where they belong. And then some way to persist that. And again, and this is a case that may be more specialized for us, but that's the database where the messages land. It can be remote. Could be at another institution. Could be at the NCI. Could be CDC, whatever. But that is where those messages get caught. It's like the catcher's mitt. And then they get reposited and put. And then a viewer can look at them or others could manage the data in an interesting way. So just quickly, how these things fit together. Well, the clinical data system generates that message, like I described. Or it's just dumped out of a spreadsheet. Somebody clicks Save as CSV. It could be very simple. That message once, this occurs once, is loaded to CA adapter, as is the descriptor for the HL7 V3 message, for the outgoing message, or something that you would construct as a regular set of data elements to represent what that message is going to look like. So you've got this comes in, that goes out. CA adapter provides a mechanism to match those incoming fields to those outgoing message components. It looks like this. It's, you know, this is the kind of thing that with the IT folks kind of looking over your shoulder, complicated as it looks in this picture, it turns out it's relatively straightforward for somebody who knows what they're doing. They understand that incoming message, and they can be made via documentation or reading it to understand the outgoing message and to make the connections. This actually, and for those of you who've done this kind of mapping, actually encapsulates a lot of complexity. But it provides at least a mechanism in which that can be done. But once you've done that once, remember, you only do that once, have your expert come in, come around, fix it up, creates a mapping file. That mapping file is here in the little box, the mapping file to HL7V3. That clinical data system now regularly generates that message, or somebody saves it to CSV or whatever. It's created on demand or created automatically. These two things together and the hub client, which is running all the time, it's a daemon running in the background, transforms the data, does the mapping based on the mapping file, and then it submits it to the grid. It emits an HL7 v3 message, which either, as I said, it could end here for the Finn use case. It could just go where it needs to go. It's got one endpoint and it just goes there. Alternatively, this is what the hub client looks like. It's kind of not very exciting. This is just when you configure and run it. It was the only GUI screenshot thing I could show. Otherwise, it'd just show a screenshot of top running Linux or something. How everything fits together. So it's sent that off. That CXChange request processor gets that message, and it sends that on to grid. That manages where it goes. So the grid is used as a transport service. It's not the only possible way to do it, but this is the way we do it. And that transport service then sends it someplace it needs to go. And in this case, it sends it to a database which lives somewhere else and can be accessed via a viewer. But the complexity over here on the right-hand side is completely dependent on what you want to do with those messages. You just want to aggregate them and put them someplace. It's relatively simple. The key and reason why this is interesting is this set of tooling allows somebody, at least from our perspective, to hook up a black box piece of tooling, which may be completely closed, to the grid, requiring really only one very complex step, and that's the initial mapping. If, however, and this is the case that we found, you start to repeat these, Cerner Millennium is a system a lot of people use, it uses the same data elements to represent these things in many cases, you can reuse those mapping files. So sometimes, if you're lucky, you may not have to do that every single time. You can share the mapping files amongst institutions that have done it similarly. I don't know how that would scale in a large set of institutions like you have, but it may be that although there are 6,000 different sites, they may not use 6,000 different approaches. There may be a smaller number that can sort of be aggregated and used. And this is what the lab viewer looks like. Again, this is just a straight web application, but just an illustration of once that data is taken off, in our case, taken off of an HL7 v2 file, a message coming from a clinical lab or a lab machine being processed, wedged into an HL7 v3 labs message, sent around, and residing ultimately in a database, it can then be viewed, managed, and tied into the rest of our systems. In this case, you can see that red box, it's flagging data based on analysis that represents a potential adverse event. So from a clinical trial, and this is unfortunately, somewhat sadly, a very common event in cancer treatment, cancer research, those data is flowing from these blood analysis and other laboratory systems. This way it can come in and get flagged when things are interesting or important for a physician or a PI to review. Probably very similar use cases within the public health space. So I'll wrap up by saying, hey, what's needed? Well, the software components that are described, the things I told you about, they're all open source, freely available, see a big website. You have to be able to configure and deploy the tools, and you have to do that by reading. We've got a good support infrastructure for it. In fact, interestingly, a lot of people who are involved in our project, including folks from Ohio State and others who've developed these tooling, are actually here today at this meeting and are involved in Finn. So the expertise is out there. Obviously, you need cooperation and access to the data management resources, but you know, given that all you're doing really is asking for a report, that's not terribly hard. You can get most places to give you a report if you've justified access for it. Expert mapping of the data elements, which we mentioned before, and then if the messages correspond to the things that you already got, now this is a case where some more tooling required. They work for us because we've got messages that exist, our HL7 messages we're interested in, have to do with clinical labs, but you would work from probably HL7 messages that Finn has developed or then are developed for this, and an operational grid node. One thing I want to say before I just pop briefly up to the slide shows you where you can get the stuff, nothing like this is done by one person, one company, or one institution. And I could probably fill this page with all of the people who've worked on all of the things. What's missing here, for example, are the vast number of people who've worked on the grid stuff. But I did explicitly want to acknowledge the folks who've built the tooling that we saw here today, CA Adapter, the Cancer Center Hub Client, CXChange, and so on, represents many different companies, SendPro, and Acagra principally, NCI, Sapien, Booz Allen, and others, as well as a host of folks at NCI and many, many others. So just lest anybody think what I'm showing up here is stuff that I did or even we did at Booz Allen, it's not. It's done by a very broad and widespread community. Go to the CA Big website. You can get access to all these things. This is principally here for people who go look at the, pull this presentation down at home after they get home. But there are cross links here to everything that you'd need to get the support to do the grid activities and to get the tooling that you might need in order to make this work. So that's it. Any questions? Yes. Oh, sorry. It's Cancer Biomedical Informatics Grid. Yeah, I should say that because I think everybody. I sort of assume everybody knows it. Biomedical Informatics Grid, and it is big. Any other questions? Martin? Yes. The question was, who decides the endpoints? Is it the sending organization, the receiving organization? It actually depends on where the router lives, right? So in this case, CA Exchange is doing the message routing. So where that message routing lives, if that message router is inside the institution, then it's the configuration of that router that says what kind of message is going. Remember, it's not limited to one message. In other words, you may have several different messages that are coming into it. You can define routing for any of those messages. And this routing is stateful. In other words, it knows that the message has arrived. It takes care of all the basic stuff. Did it go? Did it get there? If that message router resides outside of that institution, maybe in an aggregating hub or even at someplace, a central place like NCI or CDC, then that hub is the single endpoint, and then it would go out. So it depends kind of on who owns the mail, right? If the mail is owned by the local institution, you determine exclusively. If it's by an outside institution, then they decide. It's up to the users. Martin? I think it does because it does state, the question was, does the message router have spooling primitives in it? Can it hold things? I think it can, but this is where my knowledge just ended. It is a fully featured message router, but I don't know the details. The question being, could you use the router for real-time oriented messaging? I don't know what the latencies involved with a router are, but it doesn't introduce any latencies beyond its own processing. So, depending, of course, real-time is always a very fuzzy definition. Martin and I both have a high-performance computing background, so it starts to get a little twitchy, right? There are natural latencies in any web app, so as to true real-time, I don't know, but it's, how about pretty quick? Any other questions? Great, I'll get, oh, sorry. One more question in the back? The question is, how do we monitor it? The tooling itself for managing message routing actually has monitoring features built in, as does CA Grid. If I had a minute here, I could show you the grid portal. One of the things we've done is constructed a grid portal that lets you visualize what the status is of the grid nodes and what's going on with them. Depending on where you want to watch the monitor, where you want to monitor that messaging, either at the routing side in CA Exchange or at the delivery layer, CA Grid, both of those provide mechanisms for monitoring the performance and activities. Does that answer your question?